This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, I'm going to be talking about The Accountant. Kevin Hart, What Now?, Max Steel, American Honey, Command and Control, and Under the Shadow. I'm also going to be talking about the news, trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me at fatguysatthemovies.com or on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Two pieces of news today. First one's a little bit smaller. Let's just get this one out of the way. It's a little more fun. I had a chance earlier this week to see the 15-minute IMAX 3D preview of Doctor Strange. Now, I have been a little bit nervous about Doctor Strange because, I mean, that's a high-concept piece. You're talking sorcerers, and it's a Marvel comic that a lot of people are aware exists but have never really read. It's not as simple to understand as Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Hulk, anybody like that, that are these very digestible superheroes. So I was a little bit nervous about this. I didn't know whether Marvel could pull it off. But let me tell you, having a chance to see the footage, I have to say, first of all, it looks like it's going to work. It looks and feels like a Marvel movie, and that's great. Benedict Cumberbatch totally works as Doctor Strange. And Rachel McAdams works as the love interest. You've got Chiwetel Ejiofor as one of his trainers. You've got Mads Mikkelsen as the bad guy. This looks like it can work as a standard superhero movie, and they can bring it to the people of in the mainstream, which is what they did with the things like Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man, which were a little bit higher concept than Iron Man, for example. Also, one of the things I was worried about, which I tend to worry about with big budget movies like this, is the CGI going to be too much? Is it going to be overly rubbery and CGI'd? Yes, there's a ton of the CGI in this movie, but let me tell you, it looks phenomenal. The CGI scenes that they showed us looked very abstract. It does not look derivative. One of the problems you get with CGI movies, and we saw that this summer with movies like the X-Men Apocalypse or even to a degree, Batman versus Superman and Civil War with Captain America. These are things we've seen before. We've seen buildings fall. We've seen things crash back and forth. Because this is a sorcerer movie, they can really kind of let loose on the bounds, and you get very abstract, bizarre, almost surreal painting type imagery that happens in the movie, and it looks really cool. It does not feel derivative of other superhero movies. I think this actually has a chance to take it a step into a different direction, and not just a different direction into space, but sort of like into the inner space. And that's what I'm looking forward to most about Doctor Strange. So yes, Doctor Strange, I'm fully on board for. Cannot wait till November 4th so I can check that movie out. The next piece of news is a little heavier. There's something that's been resonating in the film journalism community, and I struggled with whether or not to mention this because I don't want to get into gossip, but I think this is very interesting because it dovetails in with what's going on with politics, and because it became a news story after all the hubbub with Trump and his Access Hollywood sex bus talk. In particular, the line where he says he can grab a woman. I'm not going to say it on the radio. And there is a writer on the internet. He is a blogger. He's been around for years. His name's Devin Faraci. And he's very liberal. And he took Trump to task and started tweeting all this nasty stuff about Trump and tweeting nasty stuff about Mike Pence because Mike Pence wasn't condemning him. And all this stuff got retweeted because Devin Faraci had a whole bunch of minions out there. And then suddenly, a woman who had worked with Devin Faraci before tweeted back and said, "Hey, do you remember when you did this to me?" And she described somewhat graphically what happened. And he's like, "Oh, I don't recall that happening. If it did, I'm sorry." And he's trying to mitigate it. And of course, a firestorm came down on him. He lost his job at Birth Death Movies as the editor-in-chief, rightfully so. He disappeared off of social media, as to be expected happens in these sort of things. And he's walking away, hanging his head in disgrace, as it should happen. Now, look, I don't know Devin Verace. I've never met him. I've never personally interacted with him. All I know of him is his online presence and what I've read that he's written and the way he treats other people and then rumor from other people I know. And it sounds exactly like the kind of person he is. He's a bully. He's aggressive. He will berate you and cause problems for you if you disagree with him. He loves to latch onto something and not let go of it. Hence the bullying nature. He has minions and groups and people that follow him, kind of like toadies on the schoolyard. This is not surprising behavior. Anybody I know who talked to him says he's a vile person and he's a pig. And it just took this to have him be revealed that way. Now, consequently, what's also happened is there are people out there who are lamenting the fact that this has happened. And it's not a shame that this came to light because it needs to be addressed and somebody needs help. But it's a shame because Devin Verace, in a lot of ways, he was a big male feminist on the internet. He took the Gamergate people to task. He went after all the people who were against the reboot of the Ghostbusters. He was always about gender politics in movies. And there was a woman, Sasha Stone, who writes for Awards Daily, who wrote this piece that was, oh, well, yeah, it was terrible, but it's a shame because look at how damaging it's going to be to the movement, to the feminist movement. It doesn't matter. When you're a pig like that, you can't hide behind your quote-unquote good deeds. You can't just bang your chest like a gorilla and demand that you're for women's right and then go groping women in real life. What you have now is you have this court on Twitter where people can now accuse, convict, and sentence people on Twitter with no justification behind it. Now, some of them were absolutely true. I tend to believe this stuff that's going on with Devin Verace, partly because he didn't deny it. He essentially admitted that he probably did it. Beware the righteous individual online, especially, because they tend to be the ones. When they're that vocal and that obnoxious about it, they tend to be overcompensating. This is sort of like the religious leaders that are so anti-gay that they preach almost uncontrollable hatred for it, and then you find out that they're getting sexual favors from transvestite prostitutes. Beware the righteous voices, especially the loud and obnoxious ones. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one let's talk about is John Wick Chapter 2. Of course, the sequel to the Keanu Reeves action flick opens February 10th.
Mr. Wick, do enjoy your party.
How good to see you again so soon.
You have no idea what's coming.
You want a war? Or do you want to just give me a gun?
There was a certain over degree of love for the first John Wick. I enjoyed it. It was an entertaining movie. It wasn't the greatest action movie ever, but I did appreciate the unrelenting action nature of it. So I think that worked. I'm looking forward to John Wick 2. Let's just hope that the internet can calm itself down and not try to convince people it's the greatest thing ever made. The next one, War for the Planet of the Apes, comes out next summer, July 14th.
You must go before fighting begins. I am sorry. War has begun.
This teaser is nothing but a teaser, and what you're only seeing, for those of you who can't necessarily see the trailer, it's everybody on the radio, you have snow falling on an outline of Caesar the Ape, and it slowly reveals that it's Caesar the Ape, but this is what the sound effect that's going through with the voice. I'm looking forward to this one. I was a little disappointed with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, just because I don't like the apocalyptic nature of these movies. Once everything turns into the apocalypse, it gets kind of boring to me. I prefer to watch the process of a breakdown. But we'll see what happens. I hope the apes are a little more civilized in this. This could be a good movie. It still has a lot to live up to with Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I thought was the best of the first two. Well, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Kevin Hart, What Now, and Max Steel. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Jumping right into the movie reviews, we've got about six to talk about this week, so let's get going here. The first one is Kevin Hart, What Now? Superstar comedian Kevin Hart makes history by selling out Philadelphia's Lincoln Financial Field for his stand-up comedy concert film with a few extra features.
Let's go make these people laugh.
Dad, an iPhone 6. Dad takes his phone out of his back pocket. This is what I hear. Cyrus. It's Siri.
Move your hips and dance like fish.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We sold a football stadium out tonight. What now, people?
I have great respect for Kevin Hart. Not just because he and I share the same first name, which is about it that we share. I mean, we are physical opposites of each other. I've actually interviewed Kevin Hart. I've stood next to the guy. He is a tiny man. You can fit him in your pocket. But he's, you know, very dark and fit. I am big and fat and sloppy and as white as a sheet. You know, I mean, we couldn't look any different. But, you know, we have the same name. So I guess that's close enough. Now, the reason I respect him is because he kind of came from nothing. He came from just a comedian, and he has become a superstar. And you see this periodically with comedians. I remember Eddie Murphy was like that in the 80s. I mean, everybody thinks Eddie Murphy's a joke now. But gosh, back when he was doing Delirious and Raw, back in the mid-80s, he was the guy, often seen as the successor of Richard Pryor. And Kevin Hart has that same excitement that Eddie Murphy did. And he has been making tons of movies, and Hollywood still doesn't believe that Kevin Hart's the draw for these movies. They've always got to pair him up with somebody like Ice Cube or Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Kevin Hart can hold his own. I think Kevin Hart has more than proved that he is a box office draw. Even his concert films, which tend not to break any records, they do really pretty well. His concerts sell out. He sold out a freaking football stadium. That's impressive. And, you know, good for him. He has hit something that works for him. And I, over the last couple of years, I get the sense he wants to do something bigger. What Now is a great name for this, because it's like, what's he going to do next? I mean, he's sold out a football stadium. How much bigger can you get a concert? He still likes doing stand-up. I think he's very funny in movies. In fact, when he did Central Intelligence earlier this year, I thought he did a great job essentially playing the straight man against Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Usually he's the crazy guy. But I feel he wants to do more, and I hope he does. I just hope that his career doesn't take a turn the way Eddie Murphy's does. But back to the movie itself, it's a stand-up movie. You just have to realize that no matter how good he is and no matter how much you love Kevin Hart, it's still just a stand-up movie. It's an hour-long concert special. And it's uncensored. I mean, I'm not going to say it's unrated. It's rated R, but it definitely has plenty of raunchy comments and raunchy commentaries. You got to deal with a little bit of sexism and misogyny and some homophobia in the jokes. That tends to be a staple of Kevin Hart's humor. He's not running for president. He can get away with making certain jokes that you can't if you are running for president. But he's a great reactionary comedian, and he works to react against himself. But ultimately, it's a big, long stand-up routine, and they're fine, and it's not as fresh as some of his earlier stuff was, which is not uncommon with comedians. But the thing that I like the most about this movie is it had this neat little wraparound story. It's basically a James Bond spoof, and it presents Kevin Hart as essentially a short black James Bond. A little bit of an absurd buffoon at times, and he's going around a casino with Halle Berry as Halle Berry and running into other cameos, and it basically gives this James Bond kind of setup with its tongue in cheek, and he's very skilled but also scared of the sight of blood, and that's fun to watch. It's directed by Tim Story, who did, of course, the Think Like a Man movies, but he also did movies like Taxi, and he did the first Fantastic Four movies, not that terrible one that came out last year, but the other ones from the 2005 and 2007, which I know not a whole lot of people love, but I actually like Tim Story as a director. So he has the knack to do the big budget type stuff. And that's actually the most entertaining part of it. And they bookend it. So you get a little bit of that at the end as well. So you kind of get something for everybody as long as you are okay with Kevin Hart. I mean, if you're offended by foul language and you don't want to see a stand-up film, don't go see this. But I mean, it's funny. It certainly works. Kevin Hart, now what? Kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is Max Steel. A teenager discovers his dead father has left him a sentient robot that allows him to harness amazing powers to become a superhero.
Why does everybody in this town know more about Dad than I do?
You knew my dad. I need to know about his work.
Your father was working to find a way to harness energy beyond anything that mankind has ever attempted. He was right on the edge of a breakthrough.
What's happening to me? Did you do this to me?
No, Max. Your father gave you these powers. I'm just here to show you how to use them. Let's get started.
I think in an alternate universe, had Battleship been a humongoid hit and had come out a little closer to the other Transformers movies, this could have been a big deal. This is based on a Mattel toy, which it's not that I've never, I think I've heard of it. I mean, I've got kids and they're boys. They tend to gravitate toward these sorts of things. In particular, I think my 13-year-old, when he was younger, I think he either had a toy like this or he, you know, was interested in a toy like this. It's a suited superhero. We've seen this sort of thing before with everything from Power Rangers all the way down to that Red One movie that was made with the people wearing the alien supersuit. These movies have a certain appeal. The problem is, and I didn't put any of it in the trailer for this one, but I did when I previewed it a couple weeks ago. The robot voice is really annoying. I think it's almost one of those things that if you could take it out, it would probably be a better movie. Now, I have no idea what this movie's like because they didn't screen it for us. They also didn't allow Thursday night previews, which tends to say something, especially for a movie like this. Now, if it's like when they did the Peanuts movie, when Fox released the Peanuts movie, they did not do Thursday night previews. Why? Because it was the Peanuts movie. How many 5-year-old kids are going to be going to see this movie at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night? Are they really going to get that much box office bang out of that? Why not just let it open on Friday? Well, this is the same thing, only this thing I think would have worked. I could imagine plenty of teenagers and preteens going to see this movie on Thursday night at like 8 o'clock. In fact, when they made Ratchet and Clank and that came out, that had a Thursday night preview audience. Last week, I went and saw Middle School, which is essentially for the same audience. And that was at like an 8 o'clock, 7 or 8 o'clock show. And then it had a pretty decent crowd for a Thursday night. So these movies can do well on Thursday, but they didn't put it on there. The only thing I can guess is they don't want reviews on it, which probably means it's pretty terrible. But they make the cardinal sin, at least in the trailers, of this robot having this cute voice, and I'm here talking, oh, can I help you? Oh, it just sounds terrible. It sounds really annoying. It sounds like Disembodio from the Riff Tracks episodes, if you've ever listened to a Riff Tracks and had to sync it up with your DVD. It just doesn't look very good. I'm going to have to say, it was completely taken away from me, so I could not see it. So Max Steel gets a preemptive. Sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Accountant and American Honey. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now
Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me.
Kevin Carr coming back with the movie reviews. Let's talk about The Accountant. In this movie, an autistic Batman uses his abilities to be an accountant for the world's greatest criminals, then becomes attached to a woman he works with who is targeted for assassination.
Tell me what you see. Was taken 3 years ago by an undercover agent.
It's the same person.
He was spotted in Tehran, Tel Aviv, and Naples. This guy risks his life on cooking the books for some of the scariest people on the planet. Drug cartels, arms brokers, money launderers, assassins. Who survives this kind of clientele? Imagine the secrets this guy has.
So who is he?
The accountant.
Like a CPA accountant?
Not quite.
I know I joke about the whole Batman angle, and Ben Affleck's never going to live that down. I mean, there's so many things that Ben Affleck, you know, poor guy. This guy has had to live down so many things. First of all, he had to live down the other guy who helped write Good Will Hunting, aside from Matt Damon, simply because Matt Damon was the star of the movie and more people associated him with it than even though he won an Oscar for it, Ben Affleck had to live that down. Then he had to live down Michael Bay with Armageddon and Pearl Harbor. Then he had to live down Bennifer 1. Now he's living down Bennifer 2. He had to live down Geely. He had to live down Daredevil. Now he's not going to have to live down Batman. I mean, if there's not a most resilient actor of today, I don't know who it is. I got a lot of respect for Ben Affleck. I think he's a great actor. I don't think enough people give him credit for his acting abilities. He's a fantastic writer. Obviously, he won a freaking Oscar for it. He's also a fantastic director. He should have won an Oscar for directing Argo, but they just decided not to. You know, it's the best movie of the year, but not the best director of the year. So, you know, poor Ben Affleck has, I mean, he's some people would say he's got a charmed life, but man, he gets dealt a bum hand a lot, and I don't ever really hear him complain about it. So, you know, good for him. And now this movie, The Accountant, he's kind of Batman-ish in this. I mean, I know Batman now uses guns, but Batman uses a lot of guns in this movie. So he's Batman-ish in the sense that, I mean, he's bulked up. I mean, he still has all that Batman muscle on him. But he also has that glower and the very serious face. And the reason for that is the character he plays is autistic. They establish it pretty early on that he's pretty far along in the spectrum, but he's been able to, over the years, get it under control and work within society as an autistic man. And he, you know, obviously he is attracted to numbers and order, and that's why he's that accountant. One of the things I found so neat about this movie is he's a real great character. For as much, again, going back to the Batman thing, for as much as Batman is a dark character who's got shifting and sometimes dubious motivations, this is a real dark character. I mean, he's working for some of the worst people literally in the world. And that's where he makes his money. That's how he lines his pockets. But at the same time, he uses that money for good. And he uses those connections to sometimes get out of bad situations and stop bad people, maybe. So there's a real grayness to his character, and that's what actually starts out in the movie. You don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy when the movie starts. I mean, it's his movie, but you don't know if he's good or bad at his heart because he has that detachment from emotion and reality. But it's a fascinating approach, and one of the things that it does by making an autistic character, it's so tempting when you make an autistic character to be exploitative. And I'm not talking about something like Rain Man, where he was sort of this over-the-top autistic and sort of it wasn't typical, but it was very extreme, but it kind of brought the condition to the public mind. But I've seen movies where they have somebody who's autistic, but then they're like a genius, and then they're this wanted thing, like Mercury Rising, or there was this TV show called Alphas that had a character that was like that. And I'm like, there's a lot of autistic people in the world that are just autistic. And they're not mathematical geniuses, and they're not going to be able to solve mysteries of the universe. They're just dealing with sensory issues and developmental issues, and that's what makes them autistic. That's like, you know, not every blind man is going to be Daredevil. You know, you just have people who just happen to be blind. Not every blind person is going to be this brilliant talent as a musician like Ray Charles, but that doesn't mean that the other people that are blind, that's not bad for them. And the same thing with this. This just shows it's a aspect of his personality that he has worked with and found a way to deal with. And I actually kind of thought that was a little bit uplifting, even though, like you said, the character is very gray and has some edges to him. I thought that was an interesting approach. It also has some fantastic acting by not just Ben Affleck, but you've got J.K. Simmons doing a great role in this one. Anna Kendrick's adorable. I mean, she kind of plays type, but it works for that. And also John Lithgow's in it. He does a good job. The story gets a little bit fantastic and silly. After a while, it does kind of fall into that superhero type of movie. But still, it's a pretty fun ride. I enjoyed the heck out of this movie. And I was surprised because I'm not normally a huge fan of Gavin O'Connor, the director. I hated Warrior, even though a lot of people loved it. But overall, I now say that The Accountant totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I'm going to talk about is American Honey. A teenage girl leaves her life of poverty to travel across the country with a band of young adults selling magazines door-to-door.
Dream, baby, dream.
Want to go to Kansas City?
Why?
You know, you seem friendly.
Dream, baby, dream.
Come with us. We explore, like, America.
Come on and dream on, dream on,
baby. Do you have any dreams?
Like future dreams?
Come on, dream on, dream, baby, dream.
American Honey.
There's two ways to look at this movie. One of it is to look at it from the youth perspective. And this is how, like a teenager or somebody in their early 20s will likely look at it. It's a movie about freedom. It's a movie about coming out. It's a movie about finding yourself. It's a movie about seeing the world as a bigger place. It's a movie about meeting new people and having new experiences. Or you can look at it as a fat old guy in his 40s who's got kids and is going to look at this as a potential horror movie around every corner. Because the whole thing is, I mean, the girl lives an awful life. Her mom is a deadbeat, and she's trying to take care of her siblings, and she finally just gets fed up and leaves, and she heads off from wherever the heck she was, I don't know, Oklahoma or something like that, goes off with this group to Kansas City, and it's this group of teens and people in their 20s who sell magazine subscriptions, and it's a bit of a hustle in terms of trying to get people to sell the subscriptions, you know, taking advantage of their generosity and their good nature. And the whole thing's run by this one woman who's played by Elvis Presley's granddaughter. And she's the queen bee. It's called American Honey. So there's a bunch of these allegories to, there's a bunch of this symbolism of beehives. You know, you got the queen bee, you've got the worker bees, you got the drones, you got the American honey, which is money. But this woman runs this whole thing. And it seems to be like they are actually running a legit business. It's not one of those magazine scams where you sign up for a magazine and then the magazine never shows up. I would imagine, because they never nod to that. It could be a scam. Who knows? But they certainly aren't that hard to find if you wanted to track them down, like through the Federal Trade Commission. The whole magazine thing made me think, you know, when was this made? Because do people even buy magazines? I mean, it's been a while since I've had a magazine subscription kid come to the door, but I, of course, have a no soliciting sign on my door. But I don't know if this hustle works, but the thing that makes it a different movie to different people is she ends up getting into scrapes that end up being a series of bad decisions. But they're naive decisions. They're easily understood, foolish decisions. They aren't stupid decisions. I remember the movie White Girl a couple weeks ago I talked about. And what irritated me about that movie is that every time there was a decision to be made, she like aggressively made the worst decision in defiance of sanity. And in this movie, she's just naive and she gets in some bad situations, but the bad situations never become horrible situations, even though there's very much the potential to. And I felt like that the movie pulled its punches, because at some point you make enough of those foolish bad decisions, you're going to get into a situation that you will horribly regret. But still, maybe not for the parents in the crowd, but for the kids looking for the wanderlust and the excitement of just getting in a van and seeing the world while you sell magazine subscriptions, people might enjoy that. But American Honey kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I got to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review Command and Control and Under the Shadows, as well as talk about the box office and the home cinema roundup.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr coming at you to finish up the movie reviews on Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk about the horror movie for the week. Like I said, in October, I always like to at least cover one horror movie a week. And that is Under the Shadow. It's a foreign horror movie. It's, I believe, Jordanian, but it takes place in Iran, and it's in Farsi. So I'm not going to play the trailer because you're just going to hear a foreign language and some noises. But here's essentially what it's about. During the Iran-Iraq War, a woman whose husband left for the front lines must deal with the new oppressive Iranian culture and her daughter, who appears to be the haunting target for a djinn. There are two aspects of this movie that make it worth watching. The first one is breaking down our preconceived notions of what Iran is and was like. For people in America, we all think of Iran as this horribly oppressive government where people live in caves and are wearing headscarves all the time and not sitting on furniture. That's not the case. So certainly that wasn't the case pre-Iran-Iraq War, pre the Iranian Revolution of, 1979. Now, this movie takes place in the early 80s during that war, while there was still a lot of the old westernized culture of Iran around. It deals a lot with that, and for the first, I'd say, good half of a movie, the whole supernatural element is kind of kept in the background and just hinted at. And the first half of the film is essentially a cultural look at Iran at that time, where you still have people very much in a westernized home, but there's also the watchful eye. Like, she has a VCR and she plays the Jane Fonda workout, and she works out at home. And there's a scene where she's like, oh, you can't let the landlord see that we have a VCR. Or the daughter says something about watching a movie and she's like, you can't tell him that we have a VCR, and how a lot of that culture got stripped away. Another movie that was great for this is the movie Persepolis, which is an animated film. It came out, 7 or 8 years ago. That one also examines the cultural implications of Iran at that time. It also shows where the woman who's the mom, where she's feeling the tension. It even starts out with her not being able to continue with school because of her being a woman in the eyes of the new Iranian government. The second half of the film is the ghost story. This is the one where it turns into a haunted house movie, and it has this djinn, this creature that's latched onto this girl's emotion and is coming after her. And it gets very scary and very intense. The biggest problem is that it's got subtitles, and the difficulty with, like, especially a scary movie is you really want to get sucked into the imagery and the look of the film, but you keep having to look down at subtitles. I know that makes me sound like a Luddite, but that's the problem with subtitles. That's why scary movies, you know, another one that suffered from that was Wreck. If you remember that movie, it was Spanish, and if you read the subtitles, you kept trying to have to look up to see the action, whereas when they remade it as Quarantine, it you could just watch it and understand it. But overall, Under the Shadow takes a little while to get to the supernatural stuff, but it deals with some interesting cultural bits and makes it worth seeing. So I'm going to have to say that Under the Shadow kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Command and Control. This is a documentary, and it examines the story behind what could have been the greatest nuclear disaster the U.S. has ever seen in the fall of 1980.
From the very beginning of the atomic age, there has been a sense of this immense power just being on the verge of slipping out of our control.
The warhead on top of the Titan II was three times as powerful as all the bombs used in the Second World War, including both the atomic bombs.
We got a potential nuclear explosion 46 miles from here. If that warhead explodes,
Little Rock's gone.
here we are 25, 30 years after any sort of big no nukes protest. So that the Cold War is a thing of the past, but there's still plenty of nuclear warheads. And in fact, and this was even brought up during the debates in politics over the course of this year, the primary debates, what do you do about our aging nuclear system, about the aging silos and the aging submarines and the missiles? And I mean, these things don't last forever. They need upkeep. And this is at a time where they were building, and people had this misconception that when they worked on nuclear projects, that they had everything under control, and they probably didn't. And this movie is essentially, it's about how somebody literally just drops a bolt and almost sets off the biggest nuclear disaster. And it could have wiped out millions of people. It could have wiped out the entire city of Little Rock, having a blast radius of 50 miles. It really brings into focus a time when I was alive in the 1980s, and that would have had an explosion. That would have been huge news, and it would have killed a lot of people, and it would have been devastating and terrifying. And what this makes you realize is when you're dealing with a relatively new and volatile technology like nuclear weapons, you may not have all the safeguards and you may not have everything under control, even though you want people to believe you do. I mean, essentially, the United States, and of course, I'm assuming Russia as well, everybody was essentially cooking meth in their backyard. And at some point, without the safeguards, and even with some safeguards, you have a good chance of that meth lab blowing up in your face. And that's essentially what happened here. It came very, very close to it. So command and control kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office from last week. I said that The Girl on the Train was going to make $25 million and that Birth of a Nation was going to make less than $10 million. I was right on both counts of those. In fact, I was almost dead on with Girl on the Train. It made $24.5 million. So I was right on target with that one. Birth of a Nation came in with $7 million, which isn't terrible, but not great. So this doesn't mean that Fox Searchlight's out. It's $17 million it spent to buy it. It's not going to double, triple, and quadruple that profit. Middle School came in under that, under $7 million, which is a shame because that was kind of a cute movie. But really, the target market, that tween and early teen market is so narrow that it's never going to be enough. It has to be broadened outside of that. It's never going to be enough to really capture the imagination of America as a whole and become a mainstream success. This week, I think The Accountant is good for about $30 million. Some people are saying mid-20s. I think it's going to be $30 million. I think it's going to do better than many people expect. Now, it's going to face some competition from Girl on the Train because they are kind of cut from the same cloth. They're a thriller, R-rated, very grown-up oriented. It's not an action movie in the sense that kids are going to want to see it. It's not a Marvel movie. I think Kevin Hart's film is going to overperform. People are saying about $9 million. I think it's going to do a little bit better than that, namely because of the Kevin Hart name. And this is a good time to release it. Max Steel's going to bomb. And the reason Max Steel's going to bomb is there's no buzz behind it. Also, it got a PG-13 rating. And they were really hoping for a PG rating even after appealing it. They ended up with a PG-13 rating, which means that that sort of middle school market is going to be driven to the movies less by their parents. And the teen market is going to dismiss it as a kid's movie. It has no home. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. First up in the list is Ghostbusters, the infamous Ghostbusters remake with all the girls being Ghostbusters, which was better than many people said it was going to be, but it's not as good as some people said it was. This was not a revelation. This was not the greatest movie ever. This was not a movie that makes you fall in love with Kate McKinnon. She does a fine job, but she has some really silly things that she does that make no sense in the movie. There's also Legend of Tarzan, which did pretty well and got decent reviews. I personally wasn't a huge fan. Ice Age Collision Course, that is also out on DVD and Blu-ray. That's not a very good movie, I hate to tell you. But it's another Ice Age movie. These movies tend to do well in a global market, and this one, I don't think it did as well as the other ones did. It wasn't a sensation, but it still made money. And then finally, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. Finally had a chance to watch that. You know, look, I think Dinesh D'Souza is a political windbag who basically makes propaganda. For that matter, I think Michael Moore is a big political windbag who makes propaganda. These overtly political movies do no good for anybody. Part of my problem with this movie is he does kind of play fast and loose with history. He gets some facts wrong, But also, he kind of gets these gotcha moments like, did you know that Democrats were the ones that were against the slaves and the Republicans wanted to free them? Well, yeah, if you know anything about history, you know Lincoln was against slavery. But it's Lincoln was there was a lot of finagling to do. I mean, the movie Lincoln by Spielberg did a much better job explaining the real true politics of that day. It's so clearly coming at it so one-sided. And plus, the entire thing is premised on the fact that Dinesh D'Souza thought that he was being railroaded for doing illegal conviction. If anybody, he should have known. Look, if you hate Hillary, it's a great movie. If you love Hillary, you're going to be like, oh, that's nonsense. I look at it as saying, you know, is it even historically accurate? And it plays fast and loose with certain things, just as Michael Moore's movies do. Both sides do this. And the whole political documentary propaganda arm annoys me from both sides because it's still propaganda for one side or the other. And that's the problem I have with Hillary's America, the secret history of the Democratic Party. That is it for this week. I need to go. And when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about some Halloween movies, including Boo, A Madea Halloween, Jack Reacher, Keeping Up with the Joneses, and Ouija, Origin of Evil. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.